They were involving us in an ancient occult practice which involves placing an individual, could be an adult as well as a child, spread eagle on the back of a tabletop-like device and spinning us at 33 rotations per minute clockwise, which if you learn to relax your mind and look up at a spiral image on the ceiling, you can literally induce an out-of-body experience.
Yo, yo, welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbuck. With me, Jason Van Glass. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up?
So we keep seeing each other around doing the stand-up thing. I'm at the Ice House. Just performed there on Sunday. Killer fucking show.
I crushed.
You know, what was the inciting incident that made you devote your life to comedy now?
In 2007, I was working, helping a friend at a Star Wars convention at the LA Convention Center. I was still living in Northern California, but he came down to sell some, like, Star Wars merchandise, collectible stuff, and I was helping him, like, watch his table. And I'd worked in a comic book store before that, and things like that. And people come up to the table, if they had a talent badge, aka meaning they were in the film Star Wars, or some other connection to the film Star Wars, I'd always ask them, like, who they were, if it wasn't obvious. And he'd be like, they were the Wampa in the special edition or something. They were always some weird little part. Right. And we met cool people that way. I met Drew Faison, the poster artist, who did, like, the Star Wars and Indiana Jones posters. So met interesting people. But it wasn't until a customer, not really someone with a badge, but a customer came up and was asking about some expensive merchandise. And my friend asked him what he did for a living. He said he was a TV writer. He's a Seinfeld writer. And he's a writer of the Bizarro episode of Seinfeld, one of the great episodes. And that was that. It
Larry
crystallized.
Charles?
Crystallized in that moment for me. What I was passionate about. Star Wars is a cool film, but I'm not passionate about that. I'm not passionate about selling Star Wars merchandise or anything like that. Seinfeld. I wish there was a Seinfeld convention. I love sitcoms. I love stand-up comedy. I grew up watching it. And I realized in that moment that was, like, my...
Just meeting one in person. Like, oh, yeah, that's a real person.
It crystallized it. It was the right place at the right time for me in my life. But it was also, like, human beings made Seinfeld. And if you don't live in Los Angeles, you don't ever really necessarily realize that or stop to think about it. Like, that was a show made by humans, maybe exceptionally funny or smart humans, but it's a job, too. And I realized that was something I was very passionate about, and that maybe it was a job worth looking into or trying to acquire. So that was the seed. So I know
exactly...
How old
were you when that happened?
28? 27? 27, probably. But yeah, so I know exactly where I was and when it clicked. And I'd loved comedy before that, but it just never... Growing up watching Chris Rock, it never occurred to me, like, oh, I should be doing what Chris Rock is doing. Because, like, why would you ever think you could do that?
You had to meet someone who actually had the job to, like, feel
it
was possible.
Yeah, and just to... Yeah. Because what you see on TV is such a polished product.
Yeah.
As much as I loved Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle, it never occurred to me it was in the wheelhouse of something I might be able to do. And then
did he give you advice, like, fucking move there?
We chatted. He's very friendly. That was what planted the seed of, like, oh, I should try and write a sitcom or I should see if I have the aptitude to do this because I care about it so much.
Yeah. So, but what kind of job did you have to, like, change careers? Were you working towards something?
No, I wasn't working towards anything. That was the other thing why I say it was, like, the right part in my life to, like,
yeah,
find some goal to work towards. Because I hadn't done anything since graduating from college. I was very directionless.
What did you get your degree in?
My degree is in economics.
Yeah?
That's the end of the story.
But did you figure, I got economics down, so I should be able to have money. And then, you know what I mean?
mean, that's basically true. But
now you're using it.
No, I mean, most econ degrees, I don't know. For a long time, I thought that I'd probably dodged a bullet by not working in finance. Because that's, like, one of the main... It's either that or, like, teaching economics. And
right. I didn't, you can be, like, a stock analyst.
I didn't want to work in finance. It's kind of soulless. And I never really cared as interested as I am in, like, I don't know, I never cared about, like, acquiring huge sums of money for no reason.
Right.
And so I never really, I was interested in the study of economics, but I wasn't interested in, like, the jobs that it got you.
That's also what I, you know, get pissed off about. I got a fucking writing degree and a minor in theater. But I only had one class that were like, they were like, you know, it's fucking hard to get a job. This is what you gotta do. You gotta put emails out and you gotta call people on the phone and say hello every day. You know, it's a fucking nightmare. And then all the other classes were like, okay, we're gonna slowly turn into a giraffe now. That's the biggest problem with college. They don't tell you, like, get your fucking resume out there. Like, you know, do it. Like, they don't tell you how to organize yourself. They just say, you know, oh, now you know history. We're going to learn about George Washington, but they never teach you any, like, life skills, you know?
Sure. I don't have anything to add to that.
Especially theater, because it's like, how many jobs is it are available every day for every year? How many jobs are available for actors? And then how many actors graduate theater school?
And also, how many acting jobs go to people that did not major in theater?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so nowadays you're flipping books on eBay, you know, so you're doing that kind of thing. You want to tell me about that racket? You got to hustle for your merchandise. You got to try to go to flea markets, make sure that people don't know how valuable their shit
is.
You
get
it
off
them, you flip it.
Flea market in Oakland like 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. I missed that. LA doesn't have great flea markets. The ones it does have are more like, it's like the difference between like a thrift store and a vintage store. Like a real flea market is a thrift store, but LA has like vintage stores and their flea markets are just like $20 LPs and other nonsense. People are trying to like sell you something at some huge markup.
Right.
But back in the day, man, Oakland flea market, Coliseum flea market. That's just, like, stuff out of dumpsters that people sell you for a dollar. It's really, really just, like, wild west. More than once, a guy on a bike tried to sell me the bike he was riding for, like, $20. He'd be like, nah, I'm good, man.
He probably just stole it.
Yeah, I'm not. 5 seconds, he stole it, like, within 100 feet of where he was standing now.
It wasn't even,
like, around the corner from where he'd stolen it.
What's your favorite thing on YouTube? When you go down YouTube holes and you try to figure out what's going on in the world, what kind of YouTube holes do you go down?
I would just recommend the 1986 Crystal Light National Aerobics Championship hosted by Alan Thicke.
Here's Alan Thicke.
Sitting my mind was what you wanted.
Really need any other YouTube videos. That's just like an hour of television programming that's basically all you need.
So you feel like you don't need Netflix, you don't need that. As long as that's available on YouTube, you're good.
Never had Netflix.
Over.
Never had the money for Hulu Plus. 1987 National Aerobics Championship, pretty good, but 1986 National Aerobics Championship, key. Just like, what else could a man need?
So was it the commentary, the pageantry behind the lifting of the weights? What is this for you that was so appealing? Why is it sticking in your craw?
I mean, there's
so
no
much?
Way to describe it. It's a masterpiece.
Okay.
Finalist number 2 from the San Francisco Bay Club, Jeff Vandiver.
Alan Thicke sings a song of his own composition at the end of it. That's just one of many highlights.
You're a cat person. I see a lot of photo evidence of you holding cats.
I love holding cats.
Do you have a cat?
And even though cats don't show it, they love to be held.
I think that's like a cat
fact.
Yeah, for sure. My sister...
They'll fight you, but they secretly love it.
My sister has a cat, and it's just a very blatant foot fetishist. It will just rub its face on your feet. Won't go out, I don't know. It'll rub its face on your feet. It'll go in your shoes and just be like, fuck yeah, just rubbing its face on your shoes. Just loves it.
I mean, cats are great. You know, I agree with that statement completely.
But you have cats? You own them?
Yeah. I got cats all over the place.
I
got like one main cat in Los Angeles. Uh-huh. His name's Harris Whittles.
Mm-hmm.
We found him in an alley when he was a kitten in Koreatown.
Who's we?
Like some friends of mine. Mm-hmm. Found him and a couple of his brothers. And so I took him. And he's rad. You can look me up on Vine. Cute cat videos. So I keep videos of all my cats, plus other cats I encounter through my travels.
You're actually huge on Vine.
That's true. I just plugged it right there. Cute cat videos.
Mm-hmm. What's your exact Vine address?
If you look up cute, probably just cute. I'm one of the first things that comes up.
Look at that.
But my name's Cute Cat Videos. Mm-hmm. And started as a joke. And, you know, to the extent that anyone's still on Vine, it's like pretty popular.
Do you feel like Vine exploded when it first came out and then now it's bottomed out and it's never coming back?
I assume it's never coming. Why would it? I don't even know why it existed to begin with. Like, why would it come back? But seriously, get Vine. Look up my account. Follow me. Like all the videos of my cats and of cats that I've found.
You studied in Japan.
Hi.
Economics.
Hi, keizagaku ne.
And so how was the... I have a couple questions. Is the Japanese yen based on the price of dirty panties and vending machines?
Why would you ask that?
Because I heard a rumor that a lot of the currency was based upon women's panties because they don't lose value in Japan because they're all freaks there. So that is, it's almost as good as gold or silver. It's a real hard asset.
No, there's no truth to that rumor.
How's the anime porn? Is it all censored?
Well, in Japan, you can't show genitalia. You can't show pubic hair, specifically. So it's always going to be pixelated. But, of course, it's not a stereotype. It's true that Japanese love pornography. They read it while standing in 7-Eleven. They read it on Subway. But it'll always be pixelated. It's why tentacle porn is so popular. It's because you can't show a penis, but you can show a tentacle.
Oh.
What is the tentacle porn is 200 years old, at least. It goes back to ukiyo-e block prints.
Do you know what the reason for the censorship? Do they culturally feel like it's going to make people go become rapists and stuff, or what's the origin of the censorship?
Like I say, it's a pretty weird dual. There's a dual aspect to it where they like openly embrace pornography, but you can't. It has to be pixelated.
But so also,
I don't know.
Also, you know, there it's very typical for married men to openly buy whores and stay married, and they're like, that's fine. If you're going to pay for sex, do that.
Maybe in France. I don't know how open that is there.
In Japan?
It's a pretty repressed culture.
Really? They were prude?
They're just like repressing everything. It's not. There's no Puritan nature to it. It's its own thing.
The government's repressive?
No, the people, the culture. Just a very like button. You would never tell someone like why they had made you mad. For example, you would never confront somebody, or you would just all. It's
That's
always
interesting.
You just keep it all locked inside.
So everyone just do they have like therapy? Is the therapist allowed to be like?
I don't want to
dishonor your family, but can I ask you?
Racist.
That is very racist. But how? I mean, aren't they supposed to be getting to the emotional thing?
Who?
The therapist.
Well, I don't think they have therapists.
They don't have therapists?
Doesn't sound like something they'd have.
Well, you just go see the T-man?
I mean, the whole culture is based on repressing everything inside of you, so I don't know why they'd have therapists. It doesn't seem like there'd be a market for them.
You're a vegan?
Yeah.
No, you're a vegetarian?
Sure.
When did you stop eating meat?
Well, I was like 17, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long time ago.
And what was it just all health benefits? You read the China study?
It seemed like everyone was doing it.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember. I don't know.
Were you living in Hawaii?
No. I'm in California.
I'm gonna chop this down, you know, so don't worry about the silences.
You're gonna edit this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It'll be much shorter.
Tell me about the, we just came from the roast battle at the comedy store Belly Room. Uh-huh. You've done the roast battle before.
Yeah, I was great at it.
Is there a video of that?
No, they wouldn't let us videotape it.
Oh, okay.
So there's tell audio me about, of it, but it wouldn't make any sense to anybody. It's just me insulting someone else they haven't heard of.
Yeah. There's a lot of inside jokes. There was one point where they were like...
None of my stuff was inside jokes, but it's still like, wow, I really took that guy you've never heard of down a peg, and he really stuck it to me, another person no one's ever heard of.
But do you remember any of your favorite jokes from there? Or did you remember
the ones I told? Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to tell any of them?
Okay, so all you need to know about Alex Hooper, that's the guy I was roasting. He's like ugly and he likes drugs. Okay, now we're up to speed. Let me think. Alex was born in Baltimore, where he first appeared on The Wire. His mother tried to abort him with. That was a good one.
The thing about these roast battles is people go bananas when you say it to their face, and, you know, there's a certain timing.
I'm not going to stand here and say Alex Hooper is gay, because that's a stereotype. Not everyone who has AIDS is gay. Real proud of that one. That was like a classic. The Room loved, I mean, talk about inside jokes, Room loved, because, you know, he's a real ugly guy. Alex Hooper looks like Pauly Shore. Fucked Mitzi Shore. And Room like lost its mind. So Google that one. It maybe it'll make sense if you're at home.
What's next for you? What is your ultimate goal? You want a sitcom?
I've been asking people for a week now.
You want to make a movie? What's your end game here? You just want to make an album, a comedy album?
No. That doesn't seem like a very good plan.
What do you want
to
do?
I would like to, before I die, write one episode, be the credited writer, written by, of a show as awesome as 30 Rock or Seinfeld or Simpsons or one something like that.
So you want to just one?
I just, all I need in life, I'm just going to write one episode of something like that,
mm-hmm,
that will last and be as important to someone as those episodes of Simpsons and Seinfeld and 30 Rock and the Larry Sanders Show were to me when I was growing up, obsessed with those shows.
So then you would get fired, though, if you only got one, you know? If it was one on a good show, and then you got, you know?
No.
Why not more than one? Why stop at one?
I mean, you'd have to write more, but my goal is to just have written one good episode of some good show that I could point to for the rest of my life and that would outlive me. Maybe not in the minds of millions, but in the minds of other comedy nerds.
You got a stand-up coming up. You're going to be in San Francisco.
Sure.
Sunday, July 20th.
And is this episode posting before then?
Yes, actually, it posts tomorrow.
Yeah, come and see me.
I'm late for an episode. That's why I'm tracking you down. I just got to get one out there.
I made the cut.
You made the cut.
Yes.
Sunday, July 20th, San Francisco, 8 p.m. It's called the
Cinecave.
Lost Weekend Video Theater. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Cinecave at Lost Weekend Video. It's underneath a operating video rental store in the Mission, because it's in San Francisco.
So they still have, support.
They still barely have a video rental store. And I mean literally videos. They got DVDs too.
Yeah.
But they also rent
VHS
rare
tapes.
VHS tapes of like cool foreign films. It's actually like the hottest, coolest comedy space in San Francisco. It's the Cine Cave because it's in the basement. It's in the basement of a video store. So yeah, that's gonna be a good show probably.
That's sweet.
I performed on other things there before. It was always awesome.
I'm gonna perform Flapper's Main Room Wednesday, August 6th, 2014, 10 p.m. Hump Day show. It's a naughty show. Not that I pay attention to the rules. That's why they put me on the naughty show, because I often, tell disgusting dick jokes. Also, check out Here Comes Godot. That's my web series. HereComesGodot.com. Click through the Amazon link next to the Highway Diary RSS feed. And, it kicks a little money back to the show. Amazon gets most of the cash, I'm not going to lie. But that's what goes on. Are you like a visual artist as well? Do you do any drawing and stuff like that?
I've dabbled in the visual arts.
Right.
Took some printmaking classes at community college.
Uh-huh.
Have designed several posters for comedy shows I'm quite proud of.
Uh-huh. So that's cool. That's good marketing.
Check out jasonvanglass.tumblr.com. Super unprofessional website. Is intentionally just mind-melting psychedelic GIFs I've made.
Yeah.
So I've animated some GIF art in my time. And if you want to melt your brain, go to my unprofessional business website.
Which is at
Jason Van Glass at Tumblr. Just one of many
boom
social networks I'm on.
Check out EricHollerbach.com. Click the tour date section and see where I'm going to be doing stand-up.
I tried to add a tour date section to my Tumblr, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. I just thought it'd be funny, because if you look up this Tumblr, it just looks like a kaleidoscope of acid. So I thought it'd be funny to have a calendar on it.
Jason Van Glass, clear something up for me, okay? So, you were saying earlier you can't afford Netflix.
Uh-huh.
You can't afford Hulu. Uh-huh. I saw you the other day pulling up to the show in the BMW.
Well, yeah, this is Los Angeles.
So, what's going on? You just, you're putting all your money in your car?
Basically. Last car got, totaled by a writer for MTV's Teen Wolf.
What?
He seemed like he was having a bad day. I wasn't even mad at him. But had to get a new car. Only got this one 6 months ago. Got a used 2006 BMW. Because BMWs are unbreakable. I don't know if you knew that. But the car that got totaled had at least a quarter of a million miles on it. Hard to say for sure because the odometer wasn't working. What was working was that you could start it and drive it anywhere. And I think it's been so much driving here in L.A., drive all over the place. I just needed a car that was going to last 10 years without being a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I put all my money into a 2006 BMW.
Mm-hmm.
End of story.
And now you're flipping things on eBay. You're hustling that way to keep up with the payments,
that.
The lease payments and
I've
stuff
been doing
like that.
That 10 years. So, hasn't caught up with me yet.
And you don't need Netflix because the only thing you need to watch.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. That's all for tonight.
No, we Alan, the exciting moment.
The exciting moment we haven't even gotten to yet. Yes, one of our three finalists is about to become national champion.
The six champions selected tonight will carry the honor and prestige of their titles touring America and abroad as members of the Crystal Light National Aerobic Championship team.
So here with the judge's decision, the 1986 individual champion, Allison Brown. All right, this is the exciting moment.
This is
one of many tonight. And now, the winner, the best aerobic athlete in all of America is Jeff Vandiver.
Do you have any shopping vices, any things that you waste your money on?
I mean, how long do you want to spend talking about the most boring aspects of comic book collecting?
Let's do it.
You got 20 minutes to talk about it won't even be interesting to other people that collect comic books.
So you just waste all your money on graphic novels?
Because what a narrow niche of stuff I collect.
What is it?
Well, it's not one specific thing, but there's definitely a theme to the comic books I collect.
Are you flipping these comic books too, or are you selling them?
I'm talking
on
about
eBay?
Like the ones I'm like stashing away,
right?
Building sets of. Just very interested in maybe like three things. Very much like 80s, 90s black and white alternative stuff that I read growing up. So I collect Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. It's written by Jonan Vasquez, who created Invader Zim. And the first printing of the first issue was like 3,000 copies. And it's been reprinted numerous times since then. There's only 3,000 copies of the first edition of the first issue. And I own maybe 40 of them.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to own all 3,000 of them. It's like a life goal.
You're going to track them all down like the Da Vinci Code. And
so if you happen to have one of those, I'll give you money for it. Not more than $50, but, you know, that's good money. And just put it with the others and just work towards that goal. Complete the set. Like, some people collect, like, every Spider-Man book ever, but I'm just collecting every copy of this one book. Also,
do you read it, like, once a week, or do you just,
no, I haven't read it in years.
You just, like, having them. You just, like...
There's something, yeah, it just
knowing
feels
that
right.
They're in plastic in your possession just feels good?
So, yeah, there's, like, 10 books like that where I just collect, like, as many copies as I can get my hands on without, you know, spending a lot of money.
Did someone roll this...
And let's be clear, Johnny Hamilton MX is the most valuable of those books.
Mm-hmm.
Is worth maybe $50, in large part because I've aggressively purchased every copy I've ever found.
So you think you've destroyed the market on that one book?
I'm definitely... It's like a $35 book that I've raised to $50.
You priced everybody out
but
of the market.
But other books that I own 40 copies of might be like $4 books. They're just interesting to me, and I want all 3,000 copies of it.
I read an article that comic books are going through a gentrification cycle, and there was a lot of, I don't know, they brought you up.
They brought me up?
What? Yeah. You're gentrifying the...
Oh, I see. Told you this parking lot's crazy.
I know, Jesus. Okay, go, please leave.
So I collect... On. So there's like 10 books that I collect like in multiple. And then I'm also interested in like, there's no way to explain this even to somebody that also collects comic books. It's like such a narrow niche. So I'm trying to think about how I can make this as understandable to a, that everyone's going to turn off this podcast. I collect like second printings and other variations where not intentional variations, but act like, you know, incidental variations in the cover art or the books.
So you have all, out of your 40, you go comb through them and you see what's different about each individual
copy?
No,
there just exists books like that. So, like, DC Comics second printings are very interesting to me. In the 70s, DC, there's versions of DC books that are published by a company called Whitman. And they were only sold in 3-packs in grocery stores. And so all of the DC books from the late 70s, not all of them, but the, you know, more than 100 DC books from the late 70s have Whitman versions where they have a Whitman logo instead of a DC logo.
Mm-hmm.
And they were only sold in grocery store 3-packs or Rite Aid 3-packs. And it's still not clear which ones exist. I found one that was thought not to exist.
It was theorized.
And sold it for more than $100 because it should have existed based on the month it came out, but no one had ever found one. So I like them because they're so rare, and there's only like 5 dudes that really collect these things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so rare that we don't even know which issues of Batman came this way. So I collect Marvel price variants. Which, in the late 70s, Marvel tested raising the price by 5 cents. So, in the summer of 76, the books were 25 cents. But in, like, 5 cities in the country, newsstands got ones that were priced 30 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And if a newsstand doesn't sell a book, they rip the cover off and send it back for credit. So, the only ones that exist were from, like, San Jose, Cincinnati, etc., like five relatively small markets that were sold, and the same thing exists for 35-cent ones the next summer. So in 76 and 77, Marvel made 225 different comics that have these price differences versus the regular issues. And they're so rare that it wasn't really until the internet, it wasn't until like 10 years ago, that people really established that they even existed. People had found like the Star Wars number one has a price variant. And so because people have collected Star Wars books since they knew.
Because they say in a big thing, 35 cents in the
instead of 30
thing. Yeah.
On the first issue of Star Wars. So because people have collected Star Wars books since it was new, at some point,
they're like, you don't have a 35
No, but somebody 30 years ago realized like, oh, there's this weird version. How weird. There's a 35 cent version. And it wasn't until 30 years later that comic collectors realized, oh, every book that came out that month has a 35 cent version. Because in some cases, there's only a couple of copies known to exist
right
today mm-hmm. with the internet, with people building sets of these. Some of them are so rare that even now, there's only a couple handful known because you had to buy it at a newsstand in San Jose. And I find that so much more interesting than the book itself.
The journey that the book went on from the printer?
Yeah, and like why it exists and like that it's so... That there could be a Spider-Man book that it would take 30 years for people to realize existed, even though thousands, tens of thousands of people collect Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I collect books of that nature that have these things that are rare and often rarer than they are valuable. But we live in a world where you can buy anything for a price, and so the only comic books that make sense back in the day when you had to search through back issue bins to find what you were looking for. Now, whatever issue you're looking for, you can just buy it. And that's not true for these price variants or these DC Whitmans. They're so rare. Not valuable, but rare. That it's not a question of money. You still have to go and find it. And it might be a couple dollars. Or it might be $100. But you couldn't buy one tonight if you wanted it. You'd have to find it.
Whoa.
So I collect little weird versions like that, things that were distributed in a weird way, second printings that might have only come in.
What is it
multi-packs?
The rareness of the just the story that the obscurity itself is the what?
I mean, it's clearly autism. It's just a form of autism.
Have you been diagnosed?
I took an online autism test,
mm-hmm.
and I scored a 31 out of 50, which is a high score. But it's not an autistic score. 35 or higher is like firmly in the like autism spectrum.
Right.
So 31's, it's right in that sweet spot where you're like messing up social interactions, but like people still blame you for it. They're not like, you're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Right. But what? How else does this manifest? You can't do any...
Never make eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
Really distracted by like noise pollution. Find it very grating and like hard to focus.
Yeah.
My
friends wanted me to go to. They're like, "Hey, let's go to the Dresden for a concert." I was like, "No."
Yeah, I don't like concerts. Maybe because they're loud.
I also think like, oh, that I don't know. I like talking to people.
I don't like talking to people. I don't really like people in general.
Uh huh.
But I do like buying the same comic book over and over until I have all of them and putting them in a box together. So that's like basically like the level of my autism.
What would happen if the show Hoarders went over your house and said, "Hey, listen, Jason"?
Oh, I think they'd recognize all that stuff is like pretty cool and like worth saving forever.
You don't think that they'd be like, "Hey, listen, how about we sell these and you just keep one of these? Sell 39 copies."
Nah, I think it's better to, like, shoot the moon and get all 3,000.
Just buy your BMW outright, you know? But you still have one.
You're dramatically overestimating the value of most of these things. I mean, I've often stopped collecting things when they become...
You would flood the market, too, and drop the price,
there are
right?
lots of things that I used to collect, and then they became valuable. It's like, well, it's not reasonable to, like, to spend $50 or $75 instead of $4 on these books. Or these kinds of books.
Can you use any of your autism shit to do Rain Man stuff, like count cards?
No. But I'm pretty good at, like, I can price a comic book collection pretty good.
Yeah?
Like, so, instead of, like, what is it, straws, and he counts the number of straws that fall out, right. Like, I can flip through a box of comics and tell you, like, what it's worth.
Yeah, if you sold it all on
I can,
eBay.
Like, I can, like fanning a deck of cards and be, like, $100 maybe.
Yeah. All right.
The thing about
yeah.
comic books is none of them are ever worth any money, so.
This Spider-Man, yeah, it's got the first appearance of Green Goblin, but, I mean, the price variance is very normal, so I'd say you're looking at $15 for this.
Yeah. Next. I mean, what makes one thing that makes appraising comic books easy is that comic books are worthless, like, really rarely worth any money, so you can flip through a box pretty quickly and be like, yeah, it's, like, $20.
These are 25 cents each.
Yeah.
You gotta tell me more about Japan, because it seems like You're alluding to a lot of cultural differences, but were you, you know, did you go on any fun day trips or, like, learn something crazy about the Japanese mm-hmm. culture?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a UC exchange program.
Berkeley.
So it was different UC students. We lived in Yokohama, which is right next to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the year of the World Cup that Japan co-hosted. So we were there for the World Cup, which was kind of cool. And we as a class, or we as a group of exchange students from UC and also from some other international schools, went to Hiroshima, visited the Ground Zero at Hiroshima, which is a peace park now, talked to a survivor who was a child working in the fields, about 12 miles away from where the blast was, and was blinded in one eye because he looked at the explosion. So certainly that was an interesting place to go.
Jeez.
It's
weird that they just rebuild the city right over the radiation, and it's like, yeah, it's still radiation here.
There's no radiation there. It's not clear that there's any. They say there's no long-term negative effects. Like, if a person born in Hiroshima today is not at a higher risk of cancer or any other known defect.
Yeah.
But it's certainly almost like nothing happened. I mean, they said, you know, plants will never grow again, but plants came right back. Like, you wouldn't, like, if nuclear war happened tomorrow and 1,000 bombs went off and humanity was destroyed, in, like, 100 years, you wouldn't even know we'd been around to begin with. It would just, like, the Earth will just, like, reclaim it and the survivors just rebuild. But certainly interesting place to go.
Do you think that we're all going to, are you worried about a nuclear war? Do you get paranoid about it?
No, because, like, what are you going to do about it? I don't worry about things you don't control.
Yeah. You just like things that you can put in a box and count.
Yeah.
Put rubber gloves on in order to touch them.
No, I mean, you keep them in bags, so you don't need rubber gloves.
Yeah, are they in shoe boxes?
No, they're in comic book boxes.
Comic book boxes?
Obviously.
Oh, that are a little wider to accommodate the...
They're designed to hold comic books.
Do they have shelves in them? Like, cardboard shelves in them?
No, they're each box is like holds maybe 100 books.
Okay, just stacked up?
Oh, yeah, the ceilings.
Okay. Just floor to ceiling? How many comic book boxes do you have currently filled with stuff in your apartment right now?
Well, there's short boxes and long boxes. Short boxes hold like 100 to 200 books.
Uh-huh.
Long boxes, harder on the back. Short boxes, much better boxes. Maybe 60 long boxes and another 60 short boxes. Really hard to say at a certain point.
Is it very narrow walking around your,
Well, there's a, my childhood bedroom is like a, it's just full of comics. But you know, like I say, it's just like interesting. I find them interesting. No one else finds them interesting.
What do you mean by your childhood bedroom? Like, are all your comics in Hawaii?
They're in Northern California.
So wait, they still keep that house?
Yeah.
I see what's going on. Are they renting it out, or are they just keeping it?
A family friend lives in it, I should say. Hold on, there's some high energy greetings happening in the vicinity of the podcast. Okay. So people listen to this, or?
No, yeah, a couple hundred people listen to the podcast. No, I do edit it down, and I do like to put as many...
You better edit this one.
I do also like to cut to clips.
You can have a heavy hand when cutting this one.
I like to put in any YouTube clips. That's always fun to kind of splice them in and talk about different stuff. So if you like any YouTube clips...
Edit out almost all of this, and then just put in an hour of 1986 National Crystal Lights Aerobics Championship. I'll be a toned-up suntan guy. I'll have Jane Fonda's butt. I have a video I posted that's me holding a copy of one of these DC Whitman variants that's not thought to exist. And the reason it's a video is so that you can't say that it was Photoshopped. And it's just a video of me saying,
just for the evidence,
I have this book. It exists.
Yeah.
And that's the whole video. It's also my most viewed video.
So as you can see, I have a DC Comics Presents number 22 Whitman edition in my hand, not a Photoshop, not a sticker on the cover. Not anything, just the real deal. It exists right here, in my hand, condition, you know, VG 4 out of 10, but it's real. Physical copy.
On YouTube, it has like more than 1,000 views. People that just looked at me holding a copy of like a Superboy book.
You're trying to tell the internet you have the physical evidence. You got it.
Trying to tell a specific message board. I mean, not that they had questioned it, but just to... There's a specific message board to the five dudes that collect Whitman DC books who had decided that because they couldn't find this one for years, it should exist based on when it was published, like this issue, this month, should exist as this, like, Whitman three-pack variant. They could never find one, and they'd finally given up on it. It's just in time for me to waltz in with the 1979 copy that they had been looking for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a video,
and it got super popular. Why did it tumbleweed into getting so many videos?
I have no idea.
Reviews?
It's not that it's popular. It's that it's more popular than videos of me doing comedy.
Are you also into
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
1,000 views is not a lot of views on YouTube, but it's more views than any other video I have.
Right.
On YouTube.
So and compared,
yeah.
I often find that putting a video on YouTube, like you have all these high hopes, like you work so much on a video and you think it's going to start like going viral immediately. And then you realize that it's like putting a fucking note in a bottle and throwing it in the ocean and hoping anyone fucking reads it.
Hoping 100,000 people find it.
I know. Just like, because so much shit gets thrown at that site every day. It's crazy. You know. But anyway, oh, but do you get into the fantasy world aspect and the escapism of comic books, or do you just kind of like their shipping arrangements?
I don't read them. I just really like I like them as physical objects, mm-hmm. and as like I like the printing history of them. They have a very tactile. There's something about a vintage comic book's just like physical, says like it just embodies something. There's an essence to it.
Yeah.
So they're very nice objects.
I know what you mean.
I don't really care what happens with them.
It is weird. There seems to be this pushback of like vinyl records and comic books. Now that everything's on the internet and like you can kind of get all your media from the internet, it seems like there is this pushback of realizing that stuff's important. That it's like the first edition, right?
Yeah. I mean, a vinyl record is nicer. It has much bigger cover art. It has like weight to it, and like
right. There's a ritual of sliding it carefully out of its thing.
Just the cardboard sleeves, especially of the gatefold ones. They just have a real, I don't know. There's something nice about them as objects.
So now, a lot of people, if they're trying to hunt down whatever comic book they want, it probably ends at your place, right? I mean, you got 60 boxes.
Yeah, but they're very narrowly focused on a very specific set of books.
What's going on? Were you in Japan? You didn't, you know, have sex with anybody?
No.
Was it from lack of effort?
No, I wasn't trying to have sex with anybody.
You weren't, What were you into? Just you were trying to be celibate and spiritual?
What was I into? Pretty into, like, vegetables. They got some pretty cool ones over there.
You went rare vegetable shopping?
Well, they're rare to us.
Right.
Get the kabocha pumpkin. Get those, like, tiny eggplants. Bitter melon. You ever have bitter melon?
Mm-mm.
It is not good. They love it. It's real bitter. It's like a melon. It's real bitter.
Oh, is that like the sour sop?
No, that's different, but it's just bitter. Just exactly what it is. It's just like a cucumber that tastes
like
it. So they got those. They got a lot of those.
Don't they have a lot of fermented food you're going to have to watch out
they
for?
They got pickles out to Wazoo. It's great.
Yeah.
Plus you can get natto that's like fermented soybean. It's real sticky. A lot of fun.
That's terrifying to me. Like, they...
You don't like your food to be slimy?
Well, and it also seems like they hard-boiled eggs, and then they'll bury them for a year, and then they'll dig them out, and then they'll just be brown and soupy with bacteria, and then they're like, no, eat that. That's a delicacy. Yeah,
that's the Chinese.
Like, what are you doing? No, that Japanese people do that.
Eh, maybe because China, like, took over once, but... Japanese people pickle weird anything, really. Carrots, roots, burdock root, daikon radishes. It's great.
They boil them?
Well, they pickle boil them and you put them in salt. They last forever.
Whose career would you most like to emulate? Just Seinfeld? Would that, in the dream scenario?
Hannibal.
Hannibal Buress?
Hannibal really achieved everything I would like to achieve, like, 4 years ago, and then he kept doing more stuff, but, like, I would just be happy with, like, Hannibal, like, 2010 or something, because it's, like, he was writing on 30 Rock, he's on an Adult Swim show, just, like,
yeah,
so super cool, yeah. And he wrote one of my favorite episodes of 30 Rock, or co-wrote it, and I only realized that later when I was, like, rewatching, like, one of my favorite episodes, and it's, like, oh, he got the written by, on this one, And that's, you know, that's something.
Yeah, you know, fucking Bill Hader also was on SNL, obviously, and then he left that to go right for South Park.
Yeah.
That's fucking great, man, to do South Park and Saturday Night Live.
So I guess I want, like, Hannibal's career, but it doesn't even need to include the part where, like, Hannibal's, like, also a headlining comedian who's great at, like, stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
That'd just be icing on the cake.
I met Maz Jobrani the other day. He was the fucking nicest dude. It is cool, like, going around L.A. just performing with such, such legitimate headliners all the time. This is where they'll just be pop-ins all the time, you know?
This is going to sound ironic, and it's not. What I like about L.A. is, in terms of doing stand-up here, is that you find out right away and also all the time how much you suck. Like, and I'm not, like, we're okay at comedy or whatever, but... You're no matter how good you are, you're on shows or in rooms or you get to watch the best people in the world do it.
Yeah.
And they're just better. They're just always better. Like, Maria Bamford's always going to be better. And I'm never going to catch up with her. But that means I never get to delude myself into thinking, like, oh, I've mastered this or I'm great at this. No matter how good a set goes.
Yeah, but I mean, I just think that means it
and
shows
that's,
you have a
that's
work ethic.
That's really cool, because you get to watch, yeah. I mean, as we've established, I just really love comedy. I grew up watching it all day long on Comedy Central, and to be able to watch even people I grew up watching and newer people that I hold in the same esteem, to just watch them up close, working on stuff. This year I've seen Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, Hannibal, Maria Bamford, Jackie Cation, Brent Weinbach, Moshe Kasher. Seen all those guys work. And it's, like, pretty neat. Pretty neat as a comedy fan.
Yeah.
And as a aspiring comedian, certainly certainly puts a frame around how good you have to be. Like, always be better.
I like when you see people multiple times in a week and you see how they're changing stuff up. You see how they... you know, there's a couple jokes that are the same, but then they'll mix it up or they'll say it a different way, try it a different way.
It's so true what Carmichael do two sets in one night once and, like, in two different places. And it was fascinating because he really, the way he works, the sets included like maybe 80% of the same jokes, but the order was 100% different because he goes so organically from one thing to another thing. He started each set with a different joke, and he ended each set with a different joke, and he covered like 80% of the same territory, but it felt natural both times. And that was fascinating to just watch somebody like that do what they do.
Yeah, man. It's
something you couldn't do in most other places in the country, certainly not for free, as I'm sure I did. It was just like watch somebody do top level comedy.
It is crazy also just being a comic versus being a paid a paying customer. Because in the comedy cellar, you know, or in the comedy store, you know, you just kind of go in the back. Everyone knows you're a comic. They don't hassle you for any kind of ID. You just kind of walk right in when they see your face. That's a hot
tip. If you're in L.A., you want to visit the world-famous comedy store, just walk in the back with confidence. No one will question whether you
There's
are
no crowd control. And you could just
They don't
walk.
Care. Just make sure you just, yeah, just walk right in.
Just don't annoy anybody.
If somebody asks if you're a comic, just say you are. They're not going to check. There's no...
Yeah.
The thing about being a comedian is it's a job you can just say, you can just give yourself. No one, it's not like working for IBM where somebody like approves it. You're just like, oh, I do this. And it doesn't matter how homeless you are or how crazy you are. So if you want to go to the comedy store for free, check out a show.
Walk between the three different places.
Just walk in the back entrance and no one will question for 1 second.
And if you sign up for the open mic at the comedy store, circle the number next to your name, and someone else will do it. Every time I did it, it worked. I got right up. Telling you, that's a hot tip.
I collect recalled comic books.
You collect, yeah.
Where the publisher has issued like a recall, or for some reason, either because they've been misprinted or because they, for example, there's a Batman book that's full of swears.
Are they ever full like? Of it. Double stamped, you know, like a penny. Sometimes a penny is like double stamped, and so that'll make it rare.
There's never, you know what I mean? Never a cameo coin problem. Usually the misprint is like the pages are out of order.
And that makes it rare, right? When it's fucked up?
Well, if it happens to like the entire print run and it gets replaced, no, it's still not worth very much money. But there's only maybe a dozen books that are like a fit, like, officially had been recalled.
Mm-hmm.
So like one of them is a Batman book that written by Frank Miller that's just like full of swear words, and the swear words are blacked out, but the print of the words, the black ink that's used for the words and the black ink that's used to black out the word, is two different kinds of ink. Like one's way glossier than the other. Mm-hmm. So you can still read all the words
if they were mailing those out.
They mailed the UK ones out before realizing what was wrong, and pulping them all the remaining ones, and reprinting them so that it's actually, like, blacked out the way they intended it to be blacked out. But, like, you know, a few thousand copies got sent mostly to England, full of swears. So that's two of the recalled books.
Do you own one of these, or do you want to own every one of them?
Well, there's only, like, a dozen of them. So that one's worth, like, maybe $30. Not a super expensive book, considering it's a Batman book full of profanity. One of the most valuable recalled books is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen book that has a bunch of original Victorian ads in the back. It has like two pages in the back that's just actual Victorian like classified ads and product ads. But one of those ads is a real ad for a product called like Marvel Miracle Douche. And it's for a Marvel brand douche, which is just a real Victorian ad from, you know, 150 years ago. But League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was published, parent company was DC Comics. So they, again, had sent these out mostly to England because those are the orders that go out first because they're on the slow boat. Before somebody higher up at DC flag the fact that there was a Marvel douche ad. And they scrapped all the remaining copies and reprinted it. So there's fewer than 1,000 copies that have that ad in the back. All the corrected ones are for a miracle douche, which is still a play on words because it's a book written by Alan Moore. And his book, Miracle Man, his book Marvel Man in America is called Miracle Man because Marvel is a copyrighted product. So they changed Marvel to Miracle again for this ad. So that's one of the rarest ones. It's worth maybe $400. Another extremely rare one is a DC Elseworlds book from 1999, where one of the stories, a baby is put into a microwave. And again, when somebody higher up at DC heard what was happening, they pulped all the remaining issues. But not before, like, 1,000 of them were sent to England, or fewer. So that's another, like, one worth several hundred dollars. So there's like, 12 books like that that have been canceled for some weird reason. Like, they have Marvel douche ads, or there's a Superman baby in a microwave.
How did someone get the name and pull off the name Marvel for douche? Seems like,
It's Victorian times, man. Crazy times.
What is it? 1860? That's what we're talking? How does... come in a liquid? I don't know. What do they even do? Just comes in a bottle?
The ad looked like a turkey baster. but I don't know that much about Victorian...
Technology. That's your next thing, man. That's your next hustle. You gotta get really into exactly how the applicators worked.
Not that I'm do it.
Were they preloaded, or was there a separate bottle with the solution that you had to fill into the turkey baster, and then, you know what I mean? Like, the applicators. Can't geek out about that?
Nah.
Maybe use one, like, collect one, get, like, an old-timey one that still has the liquid in it and try it out? How much would that be?
Too much.
Could you leap through a box of douches and then price them out real fast?
No. I don't know anything about douches.
That's your next,
it's clear.
That's your next mountain to climb, you know?
Yeah. Probably not going to do it.
I don't know. Just a thought. Spitballing here. Anyway, again, check out Jason Van Glass doing comedy July 20th. In San Francisco. Again, my date is Wednesday, August 6th. 10 p.m. Flapper's main room. That's another episode of Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Unless there's any more dates coming up.
Yeah, I'm gonna check my calendar.
Cool.
The 29th of July. That's what month it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
9 p.m. Flapper's Yoohoo Room.
Boom.
End of dates. Please book me. Cut out all the parts that are. Just cut the whole thing out.
It's going to be rough to edit.
This podcast should be like 10 minutes of us talking. And like 55 minutes of the 1986 Chrysolite National Aerobics Championship.
I
especially the part where Alan Thicke sings the theme song that he wrote himself. That can accomplish music record. But not accomplish. No, it's 1986. It's just like David Hasselhoff style singing. It's so weird.
What is it that why does this stay with you so much? It almost haunts you.
Oh, it'll haunt you too if you see it.
What is it about it?
It's just like Adult Swim before Adult Swim.
So it's just like accidentally funny?
Everything that's ever been on Adult Swim is based on having somebody seen this one thing once. And they're like, we should try and recreate something that's beautiful and weird as this.
They're just trying too hard, and it's just very...
It's basically like every Tim and Eric sketch is just like a worse version of the actual 1986 National Aerobics Championship.
And there's actual competition going. It's a sport thing, but he's just singing over
people doing aerobics. He sings at the end while they all do aerobics around him, and then the rest of it's like dance-offs, basically, where they do their aerobics routines. It's like highly synchronized, leotards everywhere. And like neon everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird.
It was the future in the 70s as far as dance was concerned.
Sure. It's just weird. Look it up.
Okay.
It's a hot tip.
For sure.
So this whole podcast, if you're listening at home, I hope there's only been about 10 minutes of us talking. I don't ever talk about comic books because it's not interesting to even people that collect comic books.
Thanks to my guest, Jason Van Glass.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Later on, man.